We're still months away at the earliest from the launch of legal recreational marijuana sales in New York, but in anticipation of the launch of the new marketplace, Governor Kathy Hochul announced in her State of the State address that the state would create a $200 million fund to support quote-unquote social equity applicants looking to break into the business. To explain what this type of investment could mean for businesses owned and operated by people from traditionally marginalized communities, we're joined by Damian Fagan, founder and head farmer of Gully Bean, a 10-acre hemp farm in the Hudson Valley, and he's also a board member of the New York Cannabis Growers and Processors Association. Welcome to the show, Damian.
Thank you for having me.
So the intended beneficiaries of this funding are social equity applicants. What does that mean in the context of the legal marijuana business? Who exactly qualifies as social equity applicants?
This is a terminology that is kind of widely used in the cannabis space nationally and a lot of other states as well. And it's a term primarily used to capture a large swath of different groups that are, you know, intended beneficiaries of cannabis legalization. And so in the case of New York, we're talking specifically about communities disproportionately impacted by the war on drugs. So that's, you know, communities, zip codes with a history of arrest, convictions, you know, other law enforcement practices like stop and frisk. It also includes minority-owned or women-owned businesses, ones that are, you know, 51% ownership of a minority group member or a woman. It includes Black, Hispanic, Native American, Asian, Pacific Islander, New Yorkers. It also includes, you know, disabled veterans. And, you know, uniquely distressed farmers are also included in that group. So when you look at it, you know, social equity applicants, you know, actually comprise probably, you know, 65-70% of the population of New York. But what ends up happening in a lot of these programs is that there's a prioritization element to what social equity means. And so, for instance, if, you know, you're a member of one of these groups, say Hispanic, and you are also disproportionately impacted by the enforcement of cannabis prohibition, you spent time in jail for cannabis arrests, that puts you at a much closer proximity to getting a license.
And New York, through the Marijuana Regulation and Taxation Act, has set a goal of issuing at least 50% of cannabis business licenses to these social equity applicants. And Governor Hochul says that this funding is a key part in realizing that goal. As we speak right now, we've yet to see the governor's proposed budget where we might get more details about this fund and how it might be administered. But do we have any idea right now from her about what she envisions in terms of this money and what it would mean for these potential applicants?
Yeah, we have some idea, and you know, these could all change. I mean, a lot of them are changing as we speak on this conversation in Albany on a day-to-day basis at this point. But, you know, the MRTA lays out a framework for something that a lot of other programs have never done, and that's direct support to these businesses and to these entrepreneurs themselves. So we're talking about no-interest business loans. And I want to stress how crazy that is to look at the history of the state. And, you know, where we are today in terms of cannabis, you know, the state is now saying we're going to actually give you money to grow cannabis. When only 5-7 years ago, they were locking people away for doing the same thing. So it's a significant leap in the right direction. You know, with the $200 million, you're primarily looking at a lot of direct business support to social equity applicants who receive licensing. And so one of the biggest barriers in the cannabis space is access to capital. Banks cannot operate in cannabis space because of the federal classification of marijuana. So, you know, what ends up happening is, you know, these groups get licenses and they do not have the capital or, you know, technical expertise to really pull off what are really complex, you know, compliant heavy businesses. And so that $200 million is intended to make sure that these businesses succeed. If we're going to give 50% of these licenses to social equity applicants, we have to have the infrastructure and the funding to really support them and help them succeed. Otherwise, you know, what's the point of giving someone a license if you know they're just going to fail within the first year? I mean, that's what happens already with the majority of small businesses across this country. Cannabis is an even harder business to get into. And so that money should really be viewed as a buffer against failure, you know, first year, second year failure of a lot of these businesses that we're going to give out licenses to.
We spoke recently with Assembly Majority Leader Crystal Peoples-Stokes, who is driving force behind this legislation, and she described the $200 million investment as a quote-unquote start. How do you think about this money? Is this the beginning, the first phase of money, or will this accomplish everything in terms of achieving our 50% social equity applicant engagement goal?
If we're defining our goal as 50% of the licenses, then yeah, sure, maybe $200 million might get us there. But you know, when you talk about licensing, you're not talking about market share. So you could give 50% licenses across the supply chain of legal cannabis industry to social equity businesses, and they could still hold only 10% of the market share, with the rest going to, you know, larger companies that are, you know, backed by venture capital. And so, you know, if we want to create an actual equitable industry where they also have 50% of the market share, no, $200 million is much like she said, is a start.
So then what sort of investment should we be thinking of?
Ongoing investments. I think that, you know, maybe, you know, investments in incubators, the technical expertise, the training, the back office support to keep some of these businesses compliant. I mean, there's just a huge learning curve we're talking about here with cannabis. We're essentially launching, you know, what could be a $10 billion industry, and no one in New York has ever legally been allowed to build these businesses, study them. They're not available in CUNY schools. They're only just now becoming available in SUNY schools. So we're essentially creating a situation where every other state and all the businesses in those other states who have like a 5 to 7, 10 year head start over our residents in knowledge around this business and, you know, the ability to scale, you know, industrial solutions and cannabis. And so we really need to get our, you know, young people and our social equity applicants up to speed on what the cannabis industry actually, you know, entails from a business perspective. And that's ongoing support. That's annual support in incubators, in CUNY schools and SUNY schools, and in training, workforce development.
As the state begins to allocate money from the social equity fund in the future, is there any sort of line that they should look out for in terms of businesses that just need a little help in terms of getting their business off the ground and going through any growing pains, as opposed to businesses that really just aren't going to cut it? They're not up to snuff even with the help, and you're essentially subsidizing a flawed business.
No, I don't think we do.
How come?
Because I think that, you know, we should be comfortable with the idea that some of these businesses will fail. I do think that we should let them fail. We should not be there's no solution that sees the government continually subsidizing a business, a cannabis business, in perpetuity. That probably won't be the case. But we should be comfortable with the idea that some of this money will go to failing businesses and will not, you know, end up with successful social equity business. That's just the nature of business in this country. That's the nature of risk. That's the nature of everything. And, you know, when the state agrees to loan out money to businesses, they should be they probably already know, you know, the anticipated failure rate of some of these loans. That's absolutely no reason not to take the risk to support these entrepreneurs. And I'm not saying it's going to be widespread. I think that, you know, dispensaries, if you look at dispensaries across other legal states, they actually have very, you know, consistent revenue streams. They make a lot of money. These aren't like, you know, restaurants the state is starting. These are very profitable businesses that, you know, have easily identifiable models for success across, you know, places like Massachusetts, Vermont. And I think that we're going to see a lot more success rates than you would normally see in any other business.
Should we think about this money that's going to be spent to advance our social equity goals as a loan, or will this money end up being grants?
I definitely think, you know, they should be considered loans to begin with, because we want to treat these entrepreneurs as business owners. They're not running, you know, state-run, you know, dispensaries or, you know, greenhouses. These are folks who are profit-minded. I mean, they can turn a dollar into two. And so we should treat their businesses like any other business. And the reason the state's stepping in here and providing this money is not because, you know, it's they're doing it because the banks can't do it. And there's not a lot of other organizations that can step in and provide this kind of capital. So they're operating in a very unique situation where you know, access to capital is just not where it should be for a lot of these startup businesses. And that creates a situation where the people who are best positioned to take advantage of the opportunity have a lot of private capital. And so that's what the state's doing, is they're just filling a gap that would normally be there for any other business.
We've begun to see legislation introduced that would expand the definition of social equity applicants, including one that would make LGBTQ New Yorkers qualify as social equity applicants. What do you think of expanding the definition like that?
I think it's risky. I think it's not necessarily my place. As I'm not an expert on, you know, who the state should decide to include in that. But the second you start talking about amendments to the MRCA, expanding definitions, or, you know, removing certain categories from the definition, it opens the gate to a lot more, challenges to the bill and difficulty in implementation. You know, a lot of the definitions of social equity that we're including there will have to be a verification process that, you know, staff who work at New York State will have to verify. They'll have to comb through, you know, personal records, papers, you know, leases, all this information. And so when you start expanding the definition into, you know, people's personal lives, it just gets very complicated to verify from the state's perspective. I support, you know, a diverse and inclusive cannabis industry. I also support emphasizing the importance of, you know, really prioritizing the most harmed community, and that's people who spent time in prison for cannabis. It's people who were stopped and frisked in the city. It's a very difficult tightrope to walk for the state, and I'm not envious of their position.
Well, following up on the point you made about the state's role in this process, in terms of pursuing social equity in the cannabis space, particularly for people of color, do you think it matters that the state's top cannabis staffer is Black and the chair of the state's cannabis regulatory board is Black?
I don't necessarily think the color of their skin is going to dictate, you know, how they proceed with it. I think that the most important qualification they have is as New Yorkers and people who, you know, in most cases, I think on that board, grew up in New York and grew up watching, you know, what the Rockefeller laws did to Black and brown people across the state, to all people across the state. I think that they, you know, carry that with them in the work that they do. And, you know, I think that when you look at the data and you look at, you know, the history of racist practices, racial profiling, and what, you know, cannabis criminalization actually did to these communities, the decision will be obvious to them on which groups to prioritize for licensing.
Well, you said the color of their skin doesn't matter, but those lived experiences are often a product of the color of their skin. So, I mean, you don't think that will be a product of that?
Yeah, I mean, sure. I think that if they were white, I would also expect them to do the right thing in terms of, you know, prioritizing for licensing. But yeah, I do think, you know, their lived experience will play a role in, you know, how they view, you know, the support for these businesses and, you know, prioritizing licensing in certain zip codes. I definitely believe that.
And finally, when we spoke with Assembly Member Crystal People Stokes, she talked about how there was a skepticism surrounding whether the state will actually throw itself behind achieving these goals, even though they are written in state law. How are you thinking about these goals right now? Are you optimistic that the state will follow through and try to achieve them in a meaningful way? Or are you someone who has that healthy skepticism as well?
I will be optimistic until it doesn't suit me anymore. Right now I'm optimistic. And the second, I see evidence of the state backtracking on some of the promises they've made and the lofty commitments they've shared publicly, you know, I will turn into, you know, less of an advocate and more of, you know, to an oppositional figure, because the MRTA is a fantastic piece of legislation, and to do it the disservice of not, you know, implementing it correctly would be a travesty, because it took years of advocacy to get to where we are now. And, you know, to fumble on the first yard line, I think it would be a great disappointment to a lot of people. So, but I'm looking at it for now optimistically.
Well, unfortunately, we're going to have to leave it there. We've been speaking with Damian Fagan. He's the founder and head farmer of Gully Bean, a 10-acre hemp farm in the Hudson Valley. And he's also a board member for the New York Cannabis Growers and Processors Association. Damian, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.